This is A New Angle, a show about cool people doing awesome things in and around Montana. I'm your host, Justin Angle. This show is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business. Hey folks, welcome back, and thanks for tuning in. Today I am speaking with Sherry and Andy Chidwick, two recently retired school teachers from Stevensville, Montana, who are about to launch their next chapter of life as overland adventurers.
The American dream lifestyle is not very affordable. People do it because they think that's the only thing you can do, but they just have not been exposed to any alternatives.
The Chidwicks are in the final stages of selling all of their stuff and building out their adventure vehicle. I'm excited to learn all about their plans. Sherry, Andy, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So tell us, where did you grow up and what did your parents do? Sherry, let's start with you.
I actually have lived a lot of places, but my childhood was in Michigan.
Okay.
And my parents, my dad was a banker. My mom worked in various secretarial jobs and had some years that she stayed home with us as well.
Excellent. So Andy, how about you?
Well, I grew up in Southern California in sunny Santa Barbara.
Nice place.
Yeah, it's a great place to be from. And once you leave, it's really hard to go back.
Indeed, yeah.
My dad actually, for 31 years, ran a fast food business called Foster's Freeze. Think of Dairy Queen.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And he was a hardworking man. He spent many, many hours keeping that business afloat. And my mom supported him in that process, often worked there as well, and then, you know, raised a family.
Wonderful. The two of you are at this wild change in life. Tell us what you're doing. What is nomadic midlife and what is happening in your world?
We have spent most of our life, what I would say, kingdom building.
Okay.
We're focused on adding to our ability to accomplish things, to have resources. I ran my own woodworking school for many years. We've been teachers. And most of what we've tried to accomplish is to, you know, build capacity, build resource, build, you know, our house started off as a two-bedroom, one-bath home, and it's now a six-bedroom, four-bath home.
Right. Accumulation.
Accumulation of things and resources and potential. And it's a wonderful stage of life. But when the pandemic hit, it gave us a chance to think a little bit, and it gave us a little perspective. And we realized, you know, at this juncture in our life, we're in our early to mid-50s. We didn't want to wait as long as the standard American status for retirement. And we didn't want to be controlled by our things, held down by our things. Every time I would assess the resources I had now, it just felt like I was responsible. I was beholden to the things that we had and to use them, to maintain them, to, there just became kind of a burden, you know? And we wanted to do life a little differently. In fact, quite radically differently.
Yeah.
So we put our brains together and we want to travel the world and we want to see and be learners again. We've been teachers for many years, and now it's time to be learners. And so our midlife is going to be defined by the fact that we want to be, and we're planning on being, full-time global nomadic travelers.
Okay. Before we get into what that means, Sherry, talk about your journey to kind of this point as well.
Sure. I was actually teaching economics at the high school when the pandemic hit, and I remember telling my students this is a future history teacher's lesson.
Yeah.
We are living a future lesson here, and this is going to be remembered as a time when we reconsidered our priorities. That's really what happened for us. We had to really consider, what do we want out of life? We realized that we did not want to wait until 65 or 67. We saw Andy's parents, so many people have these big dreams of travel, and they waited too long, and their health failed, and they never got to do it. And it was so sad to see, especially with Andy's parents. We already knew that we love to travel. We had a job for years while Andy was a guest speaker for a woodworking show. It traveled around the country. It was like a traveling trade show kind of a thing, and he was the main stage speaker. He was very good at it. He drew big crowds. He was like a minor woodworking celebrity, which, believe it or not, those exist.
Sure.
And So we followed this trade show all over the country. We dragged our kids along with us. We homeschooled for a while so we could do this. And we just lived on the road for 4 months at a time.
Okay.
Putting 10, 20,000 miles on the vehicle.
So you had some comfort with that lifestyle, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We already knew that we're good at road trips.
Yep.
Our kids were ready to be done.
Sure, sure.
We were not. We were having a blast.
Yeah. And, you know, you were describing there the disposition you developed during, you know, that was punctuated by the pandemic. As you were describing it, it sounded so hopeful, right? And there was this hopeful thread of those early days of that time that, you know, we thought of it as an opportunity for people to come together. And there were some signs of that and some great instances of that. And so it didn't really play out that way at the societal level. Yet you're sort of committed to this change for the better in your lives.
Yeah, actually, as we set out to see other places in the world and meet other people, we're trying to carry some of that positivity forward. We know the world has changed, but we know that people are people anywhere in the world. And we know that there are stories out there, and we want to hear the stories. We want to tell the stories. My heart is as a storyteller. I write. We meet people wherever we go. We met a waitress at the brewery the other night and had a spectacular conversation with her. So we're looking forward to using this opportunity to say, let's go see this world.
Yeah.
Let's go meet these people and hear their stories.
So our motto is less stuff, more stories.
So thinking about what you're about to launch into here, I mean, the two of you either have to have a perfect marriage, or you got to have some sort of a plan for how we're going to coexist in a really small space. You've traveled extensively, so you have some experience with that rhythm, but talk about how you're confident that your relationship is ready for something like this.
Yeah, that's the thing, is people think, oh, you must have this spectacular relationship, and right now we do, which is awesome. Otherwise, we would not try to tackle something this revolutionary together. But for years, we didn't.
Okay.
There were a lot of years that we were co-parenting, we were cohabitating, we were not together, though.
Mm.
We were very separate people living very separate lives. But we came to a point where financially, we realized we were putting way too much money into trying to live half in Oregon with our teaching jobs and half here in Montana with our property, and we needed to simplify. It was frightening.
It was actually a miracle because, you know, we've been, you know, we're 30 years into our marriage now, and it made us fall in love again. So by stripping away for all those extra things down to the simplest, the bare bones of our existence, it drew us right back to the beauty of our original relationship. And it's on that foundation, and really partly because of the time from the pandemic that gave us a chance to really focus on ourselves together, that allowed us to kind of re-engage in this part of our life.
One thing that might be occurring to a listener is like, hey, man, I've been contributing to my retirement fund my whole life, and I can't just, like, retire overnight. But it sounds like, you know, this realization that the time is now was relatively sudden. How do you then execute?
I would say this. Part of it is we didn't feel like our midlife required the same requirements as a traditional or typical American dream would require.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we're doing, and it takes major sacrifice. I mean, we are letting go of some really good things in order that we can have some really great things.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that's kind of the key, is willingness to let go of certain things, certain expectations. And it took some painful conversations. It took some tears to realize that we're going to have to shift radically from our thinking so that we can acquire a new dream and pursue this new dream. So to that end, we're not pursuing the full retirement. We're vested in our teaching retirement, but it's not going to be much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
We have our property here in Montana. This is the tears part. I'm letting go of all of that.
Yeah. And selling the property too.
And selling the property too.
Your home.
Yeah, it's our home. And it's been our homestead for, 50 years in the family and the last 20 ours. And, our identity has been centered around that. But once again, we want to be able to, not hold on to these things. We have neighbors who are just buried in their stuff on their property, acres and acres of basically a debris field. And they're going to pass that way, and it's going to pass on to their,
somebody's going to have to deal with that.
Their siblings or their kids are going to have to deal with that. So we're cleaning that up. We're moving on. We happen to come up with a plan to finance for the purchaser of this property. So we're actually going to carry the loan on this for them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so we will be living off of interest off of that investment.
Sure.
And the magical thing is we're not needing that money right now to go invest in another home or another property. And that's the big sacrifice.
The other half of the equation, the first half is get rid of everything.
Sure.
We had a living estate sale, which was really weird.
Wow.
Watching all our belongings go out the door.
You guys look mighty healthy to be having an estate sale.
Yeah. The second half is choosing a lifestyle that's actually very affordable.
Yeah.
And the American dream lifestyle is not very affordable. People do it because they think that's the only thing you can do. But they just have not been exposed to any alternatives. So we're building out this travel rig that's basically our home in our back, and it's off-grid capable. It's 1,000 watts of solar. It has its own water filtration system. We can go anywhere in the world in that rig unless we hit water, and then we put it on a ship and then continue. So our home will be completely paid for, completely self-sufficient. We drive it around with us. And then we are willing to go to places where the cost of living is very low.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to drive this thing around until we get tired of driving, which might be 2 or 3 years, or it might be 20.
Who knows?
We don't know.
Yeah.
But our cost of living while we live in that is very low. And people tend to think, well, no, travel is expensive.
No, it's not if you do it right.
Vacations are expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Travel is not.
We'll be back to my conversation with Sherry and Andy Chidwick after this short break. A New Angle is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and UM's College of Business. Access to capital, broadband, and education are three ingredients any community needs for success.
Hi, this is Steve Albini, and you're listening to A New Angle.
Welcome back to A New Angle. I'm speaking with retired school teachers Sherry and Andy Chidwick, who've sold all their belongings and begun a nomadic midlife. Let's talk now, since you brought it up, Sherry, about this vehicle, because what you all are up to is not hashtag van life. It is next level. Like, the thing you're building out is different than I think most people associate with the current sort of popular movement around vans and so forth. So what is this rig?
So we are working on a Mitsubishi Fuso 4x4 platform. It is a vehicle that is fairly rare to find here in the United States. It's a medium-duty truck. It's a cab-forward truck, which means the cab itself is sitting over the engine compartment.
Right.
Very different than your typical, like a Dodge 3500, where you have the engine compartment way out in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Unimog. Some people have heard of the term Unimog.
Okay. What's a Unimog?
You have to look that one up. They're pretty cool.
So basically, it's off-road capable of getting pretty much anywhere you want to go. It has oversized tires that are called super single tires. So instead of the dualies on the back, these are the ones that we have are 18-ply, 37-inch tall. They're pretty beastly, and we've improved the suspension on this rig. And right now, I'm in the process of finishing out the habitat, which is basically a 16-foot, it's the equivalent of an RV, but it features many different features that will allow us to sustain life, in an off-road environment and outside, yeah.
And let me just add, you can buy these things. You can even buy kits to build these things yourself.
Sure.
But I'm married to this guy who doesn't believe in any of that.
Yeah, he's a woodworking celebrity.
So. Which means apparently he can build anything. So he said, I think I want to build my own. And I said, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. You can't just build your
actually.
Own.
Well, and the thing is, it's the kind of my last big push. It's my last big build. You know, I've spent most of my life, my identity around, building things and fabrication. And so to put my signature on this piece as the home that we will live in to carry us for the, this next season of life, it's one of those things like it would be amazing to know this inside out and have built it from scratch. And I'm using materials that are fairly innovative and different. Materials that are lightweight but strong, honeycomb core, composite fiberglass materials for some of the paneling, a fiberglass resin product called Kusa, which is it won't rot. Mm-hmm. So it's long lasting, it's lightweight. And it's just sturdy as heck. And we're using recycled Tesla batteries for our habitat. So like Sherry said, 1,000 watts of solar and these three recycled Tesla batteries that will be the energy for us to live on.
Sure. So what is the balance that you've had to strike or sought to strike between, standardization, easy to access for repairs, things like that, versus some of the more innovative out there stuff that you're describing? Like, I assume you've had to think about like anything and anything that can break will break, and we got to be able to adapt.
Absolutely. So that's why we chose the Fuso platform.
Okay.
It is not a common vehicle here in the United States, but it is a very common platform outside of North America. We know that right now it's a little tough for getting certain parts or certain pieces to this, but it will be so much easier when we're in South America, and this is a very common platform, so we'll have easier access to parts. The habitat itself is, it's the thing that I'm building. I'm not doing that much to the rig itself, so the parts that I'm putting into it, I'm going to make sure I'm carrying extra, spares of certain things. And since I built it, I'm building into it the ability to tear it apart too, mm-hmm. and make sure I'm not backing myself into a corner and can't access that feature, which, at some point may break. And I want to be able to handle, the fixing of it.
Sherry, what has been your primary role in all of these preparations?
Yeah, mine's a little more complicated in that I just don't have the kinds of manufacturing skills that my husband has. I help. I can sand. I can glue. I can drill pocket holes or something.
Those are important things.
I can do those things. I can be the extra set of hands when you're moving something heavy. In fact, that's been very important to us also, is to make sure that both of us are in very good physical shape, because we're going to need to be able to handle this, not only the build, but the adventure out there. Mm-hmm. So I help with the build, but I also do an awful lot of just computer work. I do research like you wouldn't believe. I just spend hours and hours and hours. We've created a database with a page for every type of system, as well as, what kinds of visa requirements, what kinds of border documents do we need in this country? Do we need immunizations? Okay, let's get us scheduled for our yellow fever shot.
Yeah. It's super important. She's taking the lead on the planning, the preparations, even our own personal stuff. How are we liquidating our things, and how are we getting to a point where we have readiness for the moment I'm done with this rig?
And I would assume too, like there's high consequence to all of these decisions. I mean, there's, in some ways you have great flexibility because you're not going to be on a fixed schedule. And we'll get to the schedule or whatever that term is in a moment. But you are divesting of all of this stuff in order to have fewer things, fewer obligations, etc. But everything that you do choose to retain or take with you on the voyage is higher consequence, I would assume. It has to do the job for which you selected it.
Absolutely. It's the first time in our lives that we've really invested in really high quality everything.
Yeah.
And that's the goal right now, is we need things that are going to last. So I do a ton of research, even on reviews of, like, my dishes.
Yeah.
Pots and pans, every little thing, very different from the disposable lifestyle of the typical American. Typical American buys things at the lowest prices they can, and then they're just disposable and you just replace it if it breaks.
Right.
We're buying things highest quality that we can and learning how to maintain them.
So we should talk about what sort of plan you have to execute here. The first step, I understand, or the first sort of trip is the Pan American Highway. What's that route? How long does it take? What are the basic things that listeners need to know about the Pan American Highway?
Everything is dependent on me finishing this rig.
Yeah. And it's crunch time.
Crunch time right now. When the rig is done, which we hope to be early summertime, mm-hmm. our intention is to, as you said, do the Pan American Highway. Pan American Highway is the northernmost point of the continent, all the way up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple places we can go. Prudhoe Bay is one of them. And goes all the way down to the tip of Argentina.
Ushuaia.
Yeah. And that route could take just a couple years. It could take 10 years. We're just not sure about the timing of it. But we know that that is our first major trip. Of course, having built a custom rig, we may have some, you know, challenges on the rig itself. So we are hoping to do what we call, you know, calling a shakedown tour, allowing us to be not too far away from our current location here in Montana. We can come back, fix something, put it through the paces and come back. So ideally, we're taking off to Alaska and then just heading south.
Excellent. And driving up. So you'll drive to Prudhoe Bay or wherever you decide to start. And so what's the route for the shakedown cruise that you mentioned?
It'll be part of that trip to Alaska
as well.
Yeah. So we're assuming that we'll be able to at least make that part of the trip. But because we're coming back south, we'll make sure that we swing back through Montana area. That's actually the final stop for us is coming back in the fall and allowing us to get rid of all of our last possessions here.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. It's a good way to stage it.
Yeah.
And then we're hoping to take a lap around the United States.
Might as well.
And, well, it's so funny because for us, that sounds totally normal.
Yeah.
Because we did take laps around the United States all the time on our travels with the woodworking show. We would just zigzag all over the country. So we've decided we want to take one more lap around the United States, what we call a farewell tour. Say goodbye to people we might never see again. We'll fly home to see family, and we'll fly family to see us. But I might not ever go visit my college roommates again. That, which is weird.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of goodbyes.
Well, I think there's a very kind of, you know, there's a Stoic principle behind that, where you know everything in your life could be the last time you do that thing or experience that thing. So I think it's a healthy mindset to bring to this adventure.
The Pan American Highway is almost completely traversable by land.
Okay.
Except for one gap. There's a gap between Panama and Colombia, where the Americas connect there, the skinny part.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say the Panama Canal, but...
No.
Yeah.
No. You can just drive a bridge over that. That's fine.
Yeah, I figured.
But there's a... Is it 50 miles? I believe it's about 50 miles of unpenetrable jungle.
Okay.
The
Darien Gap, or Darien, if you want to pronounce it correctly. The governments of Panama and their ally, the United States, as well as the government of Colombia on the other side, have chosen to enforce kind of a no-go zone.
Interesting.
There.
Okay.
Right now, it is a lawless part of the world, and there's an awful lot of drug trade going on in there. It's very dangerous. It's extreme jungle. Like, every critter that is trying to kill you lives in that little section of land right there. People who do try to cross it have to do it on foot, pretty much. There are no roads going through there.
Okay.
There have been a few expeditions where people have taken an entire crew of 20 people and 10 vehicles and a lot of locals and a bunch of machetes, and they've hacked their way through. It's not a practical way to travel. So generally, in Panama, you put your rig on a ship.
On a boat and go around.
And go around.
Yeah.
It's
probably
not
a good call. What do the kids think of all this?
They think we're crazy.
Most kids think their parents are crazy. This isn't necessarily crazy, but this is, are there grandkids in the mix? Like, what's the family dynamic leading into a project like this?
At this point, there are no grandkids in the mix. We have two adult kids. They're living their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
nearby, are they in Montana?
Or? We've got one here in Montana, and we've got one in Utah.
Okay.
And they think we're a little crazy, but they've always known we're a little crazy, sure. So they're not terribly surprised.
Okay.
I don't think it has fully sunk in yet that this is really happening the way it's going to happen, but I think they'll take it, the rest of the family as well, will take it in stride.
Sure.
And like I said, we'll fly back to see them, and even with our kids, we may fly them down to see us.
Hey, sure. What a great excuse to travel to see mom and dad.
We're in Costa Rica. Do you want to come and see us?
Yes, we do.
One of the things I want to make sure we understand is that we're not just doing this to be consumers. You know, we want to be learners,
mm-hmm.
and we also want to be ambassadors of kindness. And it's very important to recognize that we are not going to just be travelers because we're uniquely privileged in that. We know we're privileged. We know that we have an opportunity to do this, but we know that we can learn from other cultures.
Mm.
And we can find ourselves in a position, a humble position, of not knowing it all. And I think that's, for me, one of the most exciting parts of this trip, because we as Americans can have kind of a, you know, we're the best, we know it all, we have it all, you know, we're number one kind of feel, and it doesn't allow us much chance to grow as human beings.
Excellent. And one of the pieces of giving back is sharing the story, I assume. Sherry, you mentioned your writing. The two of you have a wonderful website, an extensive blog. So I assume documenting this journey will be a big part of the effort. Where can people find the story to follow along, and what sort of sensibility are you bringing to that content?
I love to write, and I love to tell stories. That's my heart is a storyteller. I love to tell other people's stories. I might end up telling your story at some point.
Yeah, we'll see.
So I will be documenting as we go. I will be writing books as we go. You can keep track of us on our website, nomadicmidlife.com. We're also on YouTube. Andy's kind of the YouTube man. He handles all of that, and he loves visual storytelling, so that's his thing. We're on Instagram. Again, Nomadic Midlife is the name everywhere.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure getting to know the two of you, learning about this next amazing chapter in your lives, and I'm excited to follow along, and maybe down the road, so to speak, we'll get a update on your progress. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to A New Angle. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you from Studio 49, a generous gift from UM alums Michelle and Lauren Hansen. A New Angle is presented by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business. With additional support from Consolidated Electrical Distributors, Drum Coffee, and Montana Public Radio. Keely Larson is our producer. VTO, Jeff Amet, and John Wicks made our music. Editing by Nick Mott. Social media by AJ Williams, and Jeff Neese is our master of all things sound. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.